From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Here's the Ron Paul formula for America. Cut the U.S. government by 80%. Ditch whole departments. Then Social Security, gone. Medicare, gone. The Federal Reserve, gone. U.S. troops home from everywhere. The 16th Amendment income tax out. And his own salary as President Ron Paul slashed from $400,000 to $39,336 a year, the median income of the American worker. That's it. And he's on fire this hour on Point, the hot and unconventional presidential candidacy of Ron Paul. You can join the conversation. What do you make of Ron Paul? His message, his appeal, is he your man, your libertarian dream? What's put him so high in the Iowa polls? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's the man himself, 76 years old and going strong in the GOP debate in Des Moines, Iowa on Saturday, talking here about politicians needing to take their oath of office seriously, he said, and do their jobs.
If we took that oath of office seriously in Washington, we'd get rid of 80% of the government. The budget would be balanced. We'd have sound money and we would have prosperity. And we wouldn't be the policemen of the world. We wouldn't have a Federal Reserve System. And we wouldn't be invading the privacy of every single individual in this country with bills like the Patriot Act. We'd have a free society and a prosperous society.
Sound money, a prosperous society, and not the policemen of the world. There's Ron Paul on Saturday. Joining me now from Washington is Ned Martell, political reporter with The Washington Post. He's just been in Iowa reporting on the Ron Paul campaign. Ned Martell, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And with us from New York is Nick Gillespie, editor-in-chief of Reason.com, the libertarian website. He's followed the career of Ron Paul for decades. Nick Gillespie, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you, Nick. We're going to go to Ron Paul supporters in this hour, a young one coming up soon from Iowa. He's had strong support among the young. Ned, give us a sense of where this campaign stands right now. We saw polls in the last couple days showing Ron Paul in second place in Iowa, tied with Mitt Romney behind Newt Gingrich. Maybe more recent one today showing him sliding down behind Romney a little bit, but he has been hot there, Ned. What's going on?
That's true. These are, as Nick pointed out in the Washington Post Outlook section over the weekend, these numbers are not national. The national numbers are just under 10%, and then, you know, they sort of double that in Iowa. But you do see, as you pointed out, this great enthusiasm among young voters, and they're truly committed. I mean, there's some talk that they might not be there over the holidays, that when they have no classes.
When the chips are down for the run-up to the caucus in Iowa.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I do see everywhere, all over Iowa, it doesn't matter if it's a big city or out in a deserted highway, there's some sign out there for Ron Paul. People are really dedicated to his message. And in a year where there's enormous, historic anti-incumbent fervor, his message really resonates.
Ned, I'm going to put the question of why to Nick Gillespie. I mean, he's all plugged into the libertarian vein, but as a reporter, how do you read it first? How do you read the enthusiasm for this year for Ron Paul? He's had it before, but there's more. There's more money. There's more people. Why?
Well, it's a time where people really want answers to what has gone seriously wrong in the country, and he, as a person who's been in office for 24 years, presents a sort of wise figure. You see people stare at his lectures. They are really like academic lectures, mm-hmm. as if he's some sort of Yoda figure, this sort of font of wisdom, referring to everything from the year 1910, a very bad year when we created a federal income tax and a Federal Reserve System, to unknown lessons from a 1920s brief depression. He has all these historic references that tell these young voters especially that people have been through hard times in this country before, and he has a way out of them.
Nick Gillespie, he can come across as eccentric, a little cranky. Dan Balz, Ned's colleague, has pointed out in his reporting. Nevertheless, there is a strong vein of enthusiasm for this candidate this year. How do you read it, Nick?
Well, I think the key to his appeal, and it is, this we have a lot of candidates who are kind of like weak tea. Ron Paul is a double pull of espresso. I mean, it's a very concentrated, strong message, and it presents a true alternative to what most Republicans are saying, much less what most Democrats are saying. When you look at the budgets, for instance, that the Democrats have put forward, or Barack Obama earlier this year put forward a 10-year budget plan, and in 2021, the federal government would be spending about $5.7 trillion. The Republican alternative was that they'd be spending $4.7 trillion. We're spending about $3.7 trillion now. Ron Paul is talking about cutting $1 trillion from now. So in 5 years or in 1 year, we'd be spending $2.7 trillion. So it's a very, very stark contrast. He's one of the few politicians of any stripe who talks bluntly about what he thinks is right and wrong and follows it up. And there's a consistency, I think, that appeals to people. So when he says, let's bring the troops home, he doesn't say so that we can nation build at home. He wants to stop that here. He wants to get rid of corporate welfare. He's in Iowa talking against farm subsidies and against corn ethanol. This is a guy whose message does not change, and that's very appealing to people.
His candor, his honesty obviously grabs people. Now, there was a time when people just rolled their eyes, but a lot of people are not just rolling their eyes now. What would a Ron Paul America look like, Nick? Describe it to us. I mean, I can see the fundaments here. He wants to get rid of a third of cabinet-level departments, and he remembers them, you know, not like some candidates, commerce, education, energy, housing, urban development, interior, all gone. All U.S. That's troops right. home. Social Security, Medicare eventually gone. Income tax, 16th Amendment, I guess, gone. Drug war certainly over. What would that combine to look like?
I mean, I think that, you know, what he's betting on is that people don't really know what the Interior Department does or the Commerce Department or the Labor Department, and that they wouldn't miss them when they're gone. You know, he talks about the Department of Education since 1970. Per pupil funding, depending on whose numbers you use, have at least doubled per pupil in real inflation-adjusted dollars, might have tripled, and we have exactly the same outcomes as we have in as far as graduating high school seniors go. He's saying that the Department of Education, which came onto the scene in 1979 and opened for business in about 80 or 81, has not had any appreciable effect on educational outcomes. You get rid of it, people won't miss it. I mean, that's one of the things he's banking on. And, you know, you mentioned the drug war. That is one of the things that, you know, all Republicans talk about, you know, the government is a real problem. It's invading us. It's crowding our freedom and our economic liberty. Ron Paul is the only major Republican candidate who extends that to lifestyle issues, where he has said, gay marriage is not an issue that the federal government should be involved in. It should be decided at the state level. He's saying the drug war, I mean, with Barney Frank, a liberal Democrat, earlier this year, he introduced the first ever bill to repeal prohibition of marijuana at the federal level. This type of consistency and unified field theory is very refreshing to people. And if you know, I think the one big thing that is different between 2008 and now comes from all of his talk about things like sound money and about inflation and about the way that the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department manipulate the money supply. That's always a hard sell, and there's always a whiff of kind of, you know, Bilderbergerism in that and conspiracist thinking. But people now are asking legitimately, what is the Fed doing? What's on the Fed's books? And, you know, a lot of the answers that have been leaking out are troublesome. You know, has the Fed been bailing out banks beyond TARP? Have they been helping European banks? The answers are yes, and people are willing to audit the Fed. I don't think people want to end the Fed, but, you know, in
not
his
just
first
him
version.
Now. Newt Gingrich now talking about auditing
right.
the Fed.
And his first audit, the Fed bill had something like 300 co-sponsors. It's a very popular position because the Fed – the idea of a sacrosanct Fed that's independent and that is wise has been, you know, resolutely punctured by its own behavior and global economic issues.
Ned, we'll look for the political bottom line here, but first, just your take, an exercise in imagination anyway, because it's getting people fired up. What would, to your reading, Ned, Ron Paul America, President Paul America, ultimately look like?
Well, I do think that it's happening now, just like Nick is saying. I think there will ultimately be some audit of the Fed and some explanation about federal monetary policy in our campaigns in a way that wouldn't have happened had he not run for president. This is his third run.
Yeah. And once as a libertarian, once before as a Republican, and now the biggest spotlight ever on Ron Paul.
Right, and it's his go-for-broke moment, too. He's not running for re-election in Congress. So he does have a lot at stake this time, and I think actually he is changing the conversation and has made every candidate pay attention to broader points.
What about his actual effect in the field?
Well, I do think that, you know, one thing that Nick noted in his Sunday piece is that he is also a pro-life candidate. He's anti-abortion in a fundamental way, and he believes that life begins at conception. So he has religious voters who are really looking for a candidate like they had in Huckabee last time. I'm speaking especially in Iowa, to have somebody who has both these radical changes for how government works and an express commitment to the value, one of some of the values they hold most dear when choosing a presidential candidate.
Is he the decider here somehow? The votes that come out for him, if they go to him, they won't be going to somebody else, Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney or somebody else. I mean, maybe he comes in first in Iowa. Maybe he comes in first in New Hampshire. But if he doesn't, he's still got throw weight with this support, I guess, Ned.
Yes, that's true. I think ultimately we could see some, you know, he's going for this proportional allotment strategy where he'll hold delegates all the way to the convention. He has not, as we saw on the Sunday shows, ruled out that he might be a third-party candidate if we get to that sort of chaotic part of the spring and summer and there's not a clear challenger to President Obama. But ultimately, you'll hear some of his rhetoric wherever we go when covering the campaign, whether he's talking about, he has this one mantra that is especially effective where he says, whenever the government gets involved, prices go up and quality goes down. And you'll see this kind of fundamental distrust with government missions in all sorts of rhetoric and all sorts of candidates.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Ron Paul, the GOP candidate like no other. Strong polling numbers in Iowa, and not insignificant at all right across the country. We're looking at his race for the 2012 GOP nomination and for the White House, 76 years old, and he just keeps ticking, maybe bigger now than ever. Ned Martell is with us, political reporter for The Washington Post, joins us from Washington. Nick Gillespie's here from New York. He is editor-in-chief of the libertarian website Reason.com, author of the Declaration of Independence. It's been quite a year in the GOP primary season, even before the voting begins. People up, people down, more down than up, looking for the un-Romney. Newt Gingrich's the latest on top, and Ron Paul has gone after him hammer and tongs, including he's raised a lot of money. He can pay for ads. Here's one. This is an ad that hit Newt Gingrich on Sunday, a Paul campaign ad, a television ad using tape of Gingrich bragging about the speaking fees he brought in after leaving public office.
I was charging $60,000 a speech. Normally celebrities leave and they gradually sell fewer speeches every year. We were selling more.
He is the absolute symbol of that corrupt system.
Newt Gingrich. This guy hasn't got skeletons in his closets. He's got a whole graveyard in there.
It's about serial hypocrisy.
Serial hypocrisy, says the Ron Paul ad blasting Newt Gingrich, and not just on the ad front in the GOP debate in Des Moines last weekend. Ron Paul, on that stage, went after Newt Gingrich for past inconsistencies for receiving payments from mortgage giant Freddie Mac.
He's been on different positions, you know, in so many issues, you know, single payer. He's taken some positions that are not conservative. He supported the TARP funds. And the other thing that really would annoy, should have annoyed a lot of people, he received a lot of money from Freddie Mac. So in a way, Newt, I think you probably got some of our taxpayers' money. They got taxes, they got money on, they're still getting bailed out. But you're a spokesman for them and you receive money for them.
Ron Paul going straight in the face of Newt Gingrich. So now Gingrich kind of bobbing and weaving, but also, you'll hear this in one of his response, taking on some Paulist thinking.
First of all, as you say in your own, normally in your own speeches, the housing bubble came from the Federal Reserve inflating the money supply. Now, that's the core of the housing bubble. And I happen to be with you on auditing the Fed and frankly, on firing Bernanke. Second, I was never a spokesman for any agency. I never did any lobbying for any agency. I offered strategic advice. I was in the private sector, and I was doing things in the private sector.
Hey, I was in the private sector. What about it? Well, it's a question for free market man Ron Paul, you might say. On the other hand, would Freddie Mac even be there in Paul's perfect world? Ned Martell and Nick Gillespie are with us. We're going to hear in just a moment from a young supporter of Ron Paul, a couple of calls for Stephen in Bettendorf, Iowa. Stephen, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you think? What do you think, Stephen?
Well, I appreciate your point about his candor, and I think the level of integrity with which he states his positions is really appealing, and I think it goes back to a recognition that when you build the government, there's a blowback, an unintended consequence with the family unit. And, you know, there's a tension between those two, and I think Ron Paul's dramatic proposals to cut the federal government recognize that the family has really paid the price for a lot of these great ideas.
And you mean, Stephen, that what, families sort of let their guard down when the government steps up? They become less strong internally when the paternalistic government is around? Is that your perspective?
Yes, I think that's a good way to put it.
How do you think he's going to do in Iowa? Is he just kind of blowing his horn and, you know, making people think, or could he be a real factor in the outcome, Stephen?
Well, you know, I did go to the straw poll, and I have to say that the level of energy and excitement for the Ron Paul camp was just unbelievable. And I really doubted whether he had staying power because he has been sort of marginalized by the media. But after seeing that, the level of organization, the level of support, and just the energy in his camp, it made me really think that that this could be the year for Ron Paul.
Stephen, I appreciate your call. Ned Martell, you've been in Iowa looking. I mean, we're reading reports here that Ron Paul's organization is more sort of up and at it than anybody's, and really the kind that might work in the caucuses that are coming up.
I think the caller's right. The energy is just palpable. The question is it infectious? I mean, will other people just flock to the, you know, raucous nature of those ads that we just heard?
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of them, and my colleague Jason Horowitz has a piece on the ad maker in the Today's Washington Post. These kind of go for youth. They're kind of monster trucky. It's kind of fun and very graphic and interesting for Ron Paul. Like, you wouldn't think of him being on some sort of creative cutting edge, but his ads really pop in this community. Now, I was interviewing some young fundamentalist Christians in downtown Des Moines, and they were sort of turned off by it. They felt like they had been somewhat persecuted by some Ron Paul supporters they knew. So How does this play on the ground? It's down to the personal level, and that's what's so interesting about the caucuses.
We're going to go to the ground in just a second. Brian in Savannah, Georgia. Brian, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hey, Tom. How are you?
Pretty well. What do you think?
I'm energized that we're finally getting a little coverage. Seems like, you know, the way they've been playing Paul lately is to kind of ignore him. You know, and the man... I'm 80% with most all of his issues, foreign policy, bring the troops home, less government. His flaw in my book is the libertarian approach that, you know, let the market handle everything. He says that a lot. And we have to realize that this is America, and America has not been rosy to all of its citizens throughout the years. And so some of the government agencies that exist to kind of try to correct some of those wrongs throughout our history and level the playing field somewhat, do need to continue to exist. Now, the point that he makes most of the time is that they're ineffectual. You know, the part of education, housing, they have become ineffective. And that I agree on, but that they need to just not exist anymore, I think we can work with him on that. There's so much that I do agree with him on that. That little bit of stuff right there, we can work with them on that.
But Brian, how do you do that? I mean, do you think the free market will work for everyone in this country? Because Ron Paul's very stern on that. He wants to get rid of a lot of government, including a lot of government that has tried to work on inequities in American society. Now, they're high right now, but as a supporter, how do you deal with that?
I think he's absolutely, as a Ron Paul supporter, I think he's absolutely wrong with that approach. But I believe that there's so much that he's right on, that he's flexible. He seems like a reasonable man. He speaks. I believe he's candid when he speaks, which are all great things. None of these other politicians, they go to their points and then they just stick to their points.
Yeah, no, you can hear him speaking from the heart. I take that, Brian. I appreciate your call. Nick Gillespie, can you have it both ways with Ron Paul? Can you be excited by his candor and his kind of bring the troops home message and even some of the market, but not want him to dismantle a lot of the government like Brian's saying? Isn't that what he would go straight for? Isn't that the heart of his argument?
Well, I think that everybody recognizes that no politician is going to give them 100% of what they want, and that people are willing to say, okay, you know what, if I'm getting 80%, I mean, imagine, you know, if you're getting 80% out of anything, you're doing pretty well, and the idea that you can work with things. I mean, I think when you think about things like Ron Paul has spoken openly about entitlement, certainly in a way that the need for entitlement reform, if not abolition, in a way that no other presidential candidate, past, present, or future, probably will talk about. And he talks about that a lot in terms of how Social Security is not an actual retirement plan. It's a transfer program that ends up shoveling more money at relatively wealthy older people, regardless of need. As a doctor, he can speak about how Medicare has distorted the treatment of older people and that Medicaid is not a particularly effective program. So I think he can talk his way through a lot of the more kind of shocking statements of people if they're willing to listen a little bit. And again, it is that consistency because, you know, one of the raps on the Republicans is that they want to cut spending on the poor, but they don't want to cut corporate welfare. They don't want to cut they want to cut taxes on the rich, but not on the middle class or on the working class. And Ron Paul gets through that. I mean, that's just not an argument you can make against him in a way that you can against people like Newt Gingrich.
Let's go to one of the young Ron Paul supporters, and there are many that Ned Martella and others write about. Nick Gillespie, Ned, stand by. Joining us right now from Des Moines, Iowa, is Ben Levine. He is a sophomore at Drake University. He's a precinct captain for the Ron Paul 2012 campaign. He's in the Drake University Army ROTC. We'll ask about that. Ben, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What has drawn you, my young friend, to Ron Paul?
Well, you know, it kind of started my senior year of high school when my brother bought me a book by Senator Mickey Edwards, former senator, called Reclaiming Conservatism. And then just looking at the field, I mean, he's really the only consistent conservative. You could see that in the last debate where you had Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney spending most of the debate kind of defending themselves from themselves. And so I think, like me and a lot of young people, look at Ron Paul and just see his utter consistency and, as you've been talking about, honesty. And I think the media, you know, sometimes plays up that young people support him for his proposal to end the federal war on drugs, but it's really the fiscal issues that at least I see most young people supporting him on, because we understand that it's our future that's at risk when you have a national public debt that exceeds your GDP.
So Congressman Mickey Edwards helped lead you to Ron Paul. So the big cut in government, here you are. How old are you now, Ben?
I'm 19 years old.
Okay, 19 years old. You're looking at, you got a big, long future ahead of you. Do you want to cut government slowly, gradually, or do you want to go in there with a hacksaw right now, or what?
Well, you know, Peter Schiff, the head of Euro-Pacific Capital, often uses an analogy to a drug addict where, you know, at first there's going to be withdrawal, but you can't just slowly wean a heroin addict off heroin. And similarly, the American government should stop right away the spending that it does. And there might be a little pain in the beginning, but it's going to save pain in the future. And for me, I know that if we wait another election cycle and wait to cut, we're just going to have to cut more up front.
What about the fear that that would push the economy, the world, into a depression, Ben?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's going to be a little hurt at first. But
a little hurt, but a depression is more than a little hurt, right? I mean,
well, you know, it's not like that $1 trillion that he's planning on cutting, you know, just evaporates. It's kept in private pockets, which I would argue is much better. And, you know, we have to do it. You cannot just keep on printing money. That's why we see inflation rising. And, you know, for the national security hawks, you know, in the Republican Party who you know, claim that it's going to hurt, you know, our defense policy, you can't fight a war if you don't have any money or wealth.
Ben, so you're in the ROTC there at Drake. Now, what about that? You're prepping to be in the U.S. Army. Ron Paul says bring all the troops home. Are you thinking of an army that would never go abroad, that would just guard our borders?
No, not at all. You know, I think that as a cadet in the ROTC, I want to know that my commander-in-chief will only send me somewhere when it's in America's vital interests, and that's why I support Ron Paul. I would never trust Gingrich or Romney, you know, being my commander-in-chief. I simply don't think that they would follow the Constitution and only send me somewhere after a congressional declaration of war.
Last question, Ben. What do you think is going to really happen with the Ron Paul candidacy? Can you see him ending up as the Republican nominee? And if not that, then what?
Well, I sure hope so. You know, in 1964, when Barry Goldwater won, everyone started out saying that he couldn't win the Republican nomination, and he did. And just being on the ground in Iowa, making phone calls at the Iowa headquarters, I know he's catching on. A lot more mainstream Republicans are looking at him because they're sick of listening to candidates defend themselves, you know, from themselves. And so I think he's going to win Iowa. From there, I can't really say what's going to happen, but it's certainly our hope within the campaign that he becomes the Republican nominee.
Ben Levine, sophomore at Drake University and a precinct captain for Ron Paul 2012. Ben, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Ned, look at the calculus out of Iowa here. If Ron Paul does very well there, that could, I suppose, get in the way of Newt Gingrich doing so well. He's looked good in the polls lately. It could muddy the waters there. Does it? If Ron Paul does well, does that help Romney, or how does this play, Ned?
Well, it helps Ron Paul. I mean, for sure, it does seem like it's coming right out of the Gingrich world. People who were for Kane seem to be going toward Ron Paul, and it's the other vote, not Romney vote. You know, where does that go? So it seems like Gingrich and Paul are two primary options for them. But I do think that, as just listening to what Ben said, there's a whole other language that Ron Paul speaks as a candidate, and it is radical, and it is unfocus grouped, and it is not soundbitey. And it actually plays so well on the stump because it speaks directly to the risks that different groups have to take. He doesn't pander to the young. He says that, you know, he wants to give them their withholding tax back to invest. And if they lose it, they lose it. That's their responsibility. Then similarly, he'll speak to old folks in, I just saw him in a small town called Boone, the birthplace of Mamie Eisenhower, and told folks there that, you know, the drug testing has run amok, the federal government's involvement in that, and he believes that the market is a better regulator than politicians or bureaucrats. So what does that mean? Does that mean drugs get just tested on the general population? Come what may, your grandmother or your child could be victim to a poorly constructed prescription. So these are this is tough talk. This is not just telling people what they want to hear.
Nick, do you think Americans really have a taste for libertarianism at this point? You know, the kind of stern, straight-up variety that Ron Paul puts out there. Is this, or is this a kind of a conceptual attraction? In fact, they'd freak out.
Well, you know, two things. I mean, first is that there's no question that Ron Paul, on a certain level, is stern. As Ned was saying, when he talks to students, he says, you know what, you should be free to put whatever you want in your body. You can smoke what you want, drink what you want, inject what you want. But when you have problems, you can't come running to the government and say, oh, I ruined my life, now bail me out. He says you've got to take responsibility for your actions. So, you know, what he does constantly is match a kind of vision of freedom with a vision of responsibility. But he's also upbeat. I mean, this is not a, you know, he's not a shaker or something where you're not allowed to have any unwanted action or, kind of luxury items in your house. It's that twin ethic of freedom and responsibility, which does play well because we've gotten the reverse of that, where we don't have much freedom and we don't have much responsibility, but we don't have any, kind of scope of action. To go back to Ben also, by the way, Ron Paul, hugely popular among active military. He has consistently, since 2008, led all presidential contenders, Republican or Democratic, in donations from active military. He's speaking to the military.
We're going to come back and look at exactly that point in a moment with Max Boot. Nick Gillespie, please stand by. Ned Martell, political reporter for The Washington Post. Wonderful to have you with us, Ned. Let's stay in touch. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the GOP candidate like no other, Ron Paul, and his camp in the 2012 race for the White House. Nick Gillespie is with us, editor-in-chief of Reason.com, the libertarian website. Max Boot joins us in a moment. You can join us as well. What do you think about Ron Paul? Is he a winner, a GOP spoiler, a Republican Ralph Nader? Could he, should he, launch a third-party bid if it comes to that? What is the bottom line on Ron Paul? Nick, lots of response online. You've got people singing Ron Paul's hosannas in our web postings and Facebook and Twitter and all the rest. You got people tearing their hair out and saying, no way, this could be the end of, you know, everything that matters.
Right.
But then some in between here. Steve says, what a refreshing, consistent, and honest politician. It's unfortunate I can't agree with many of his views, like eliminating the Federal Reserve, but I admire him. Ivanhoe says electing Ron Paul would be the first step in a bottom-up movement, a little Occupy attitude there. Ray says, skeptical about your thing, libertarianism. Nikki says, like the idea of a communist society, libertarianism wouldn't really work. Both expect too much from people. And here on the military front, we're going to go to Max Boot on this, but Branstad says, while I don't agree with the extent of Ron Paul's plan to pull our defenses back, I do see some of his point. Do we really need to protect Europe from Europe? We have 54,000 troops in Germany, for heaven's sakes. Do we really need to protect South Korea from North Korea? Do we really need to protect Japan with 40,000 troops? Why do we have to pay for protection of foreign countries? That sentiment is out there. Nick, stand by there in New York. I want to welcome into our conversation Max Boot. He's the Gene J. Kirkpatrick Senior Fellow in National Security Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, author of War Made New and The Savage Wars of Peace. Max Boot, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me on again.
How do you think about Ron Paul? Max, you're conservative. He's conservative, but he's got this big libertarian streak. You know, here you are, big advocate of American power and projection around the world. You've said, you know, your ideas about American might to promote American ideals. Is Ron Paul your nightmare on the security front, Max? How do you look at him?
Oh, Ron Paul is not a nightmare, I think. He's an amusing sideshow that it's hard to take very seriously. I would dispute your characterization of him as a conservative, by the way. I don't think he is a conservative. I think he is a libertarian extremist. His views have nothing to do with conservative foreign policy as it has been understood and practiced by the likes of Abraham Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, Ronald Reagan, and other great conservative presidents. What he advocates on the foreign policy front is a retreat into isolation, which would be as big of a disaster today as it was the last time we tried it in the 1930s. But I can't really get too worked up about his views because, you know, he has about as much chance of becoming president as I do. He's got a small band of devoted followers, and I'm sure you're hearing from some of them on the program. But he is not a serious statesman. He is not a serious presidential candidate. He is a fringe character.
Well, for that band, then, not so small these days in the polls, but I take your point. Many say, you know, he'll end up clearly somewhere not in the White House, but he has been influential. But for that band or others looking on, interested right now, Max, if it were President Paul, hypothetically, and he did what he says he wants to do, bring the troops home from everywhere, how do you picture the other side of that policy change?
It's not going to happen, and the reason it's not going to happen is that every responsible leader in both the Democratic and Republican Party recognizes that would be an unmitigated disaster for the United States and for the world. The U.S. military presence abroad has underwritten the expansion of liberty and freedom and free markets over the course of the last 60 years. It is our Army, our Navy, our Air Force, our Marine Corps, which defend liberty around the world and prevent conflicts from breaking out. It's their most important role is not even to fight wars. It's to deter adversaries and to prevent aggression from occurring. They have kept the peace in large part in places like Europe and East Asia, which have known nothing but war in the past, and they have allowed for the peaceful expansion of those regions, all of which has been very much to America's benefit. The defense budget is actually very cheap by comparison with what we get for it. We're spending now well under 5% of our gross domestic product, roughly half of what we were spending during much of the Cold War. And for that, we basically underwrite global security, which allows us to be the most prosperous nation in the world and to benefit from this international trade of which we are such a major part. So if we were to withdraw from that, what you would see would be a field day for aggressors, whether it's terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda or illiberal autocracies like China, which would try to usurp the American place in the world, which would trigger conflict. It would be a disaster. And again, all you have to do is look at our historic experience with isolationism in the 1930s. After that, both Republicans and Democrats vowed never again. Only Ron Paul doesn't seem to have gotten the message.
And, of course, if Ron Paul were here, we've heard him, and he would argue that chapter and verse. But Max Boot, we recognize that very well, and that's a perspective on the world that is deeply held in many Republican circles. Nick Gillespie From a libertarian's chair, I don't know if you argue it the same way Ron Paul does or not, but take on the issue of security and the global presence of American forces.
I think Max's thumbnail history of American power securing freedom and whatnot made more sense in 1991 than it does now. And he has to obscure the last 20 years and particularly the last 10 years of American defense policy, which has not been a success and has not secured peace, certainly for the United States and for large parts of the world. The reason why China is trading with the U.S. is not because they're afraid of our army or our navy or our air force. It's because they want what we have, which they understand now that they'll get more through trade and economic development than trying to occupy the Korean Peninsula. This is a huge line in the, not a line in the sand, but it's a fissure within the general right of center movement. But it's actually within all politics. Ron Paul, I don't think, and I don't sign on to everything that he says, I don't think that he is an isolationist. And using the term isolationist is loaded already. I mean, he's clearly a non-interventionist. He believes in a defense policy, not forward-thinking or preemptive war and things like that. And that, regardless of what Max says and regardless of quoting how much of GDP we're spending on defense, the fact is that under first Bush and then Obama, defense spending has continued to increase. If you run through Obama's numbers and his budget, he would actually, over the next 10 years, increase defense spending and Homeland Security spending more than the Republicans. What we're talking about here is an establishment that is very interested in always increasing defense spending or so-called defense spending. It's really spending on military contractors. Ron Paul says no, that there's a limit to what we need to spend on defense, and that, consistent with what conservatives say everywhere else, giving the government more power and more money to do something does not secure a better outcome. In fact, it generally weakens the possibility of that. It's true about defense as it is about education.
Max, I'll bring that
and
back to you.
That's why his message registers with a lot of people, especially after a decade of two vague, ill-defined wars that did work to eradicate most of al-Qaeda. But that doesn't mean we needed to be, occupying Iraq and then moving into other countries.
Max Boot, I'll bring that back to you. Let me get a couple callers in here. Juliet in Boston. Thanks for calling, Juliet. You're on the air.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
What do you think?
You know, I think I completely disagree with Max. You know, some of the things he was saying. I'd echo your guest views. I think one of the main reasons I support Ron Paul and I really like the guy is his international stance on, being a non-interventionist.
And do you think the country would be safer or more in danger? You hear Max Boot saying, look, if you're not out there sort of guarding your interest in the world, you're going to end up paying on the other end.
You know, I think the world would absolutely be safer, and not just because Ron Paul says it, but, I mean, he has very reliable sources that he quotes and that he's based his opinion on. The CIA has come out with multiple reports saying that America's international policy has instigated a lot of violence against America. And, he always raises the point, Ron Paul does, that if these people were on our soil trying to tell us what kind of nation we needed to have, what would we do? We wouldn't be okay with that. We'd retaliate. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing, internationally. The 9/11 Commission echoed the exact same thing Ron Paul's saying.
We do hear that every time he's on the stump, Juliet, and we've got it loud and clear. I appreciate your call. One more, Jupiter, Florida. Thank you, Juliet. Robert, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call. I basically agree with Ron Paul's concepts. I don't think we should be afraid to change. And the other thing is that an idea that I've had for a while is that I think we should take the capital and move it out of Washington and have the cities, different cities in the United States, bid on the opportunity to...
to be the next Washington?
entertain the capital for 10 years like they do the Olympics.
Don't be afraid to change. We've got it. Even move the capital, Robert. We've got it, and I appreciate your call. Scott in Fairfield, Connecticut. Scott, you're on.
Yes, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the aspect of this that I think is most interesting is that Paul's appeal is really an expression of the same frustration that we see in the Occupy Wall Street movement, even the Tea Party movement. People are fed up with the dysfunctionality of our government. And it's less a question of the specifics of his policy than it is a question of the fact that people are just disgusted and they're looking for different answers. But the answer, it seems to me, is not to dismantle government. It's to make government more functional.
Scott, I appreciate your call as well. Max Boot, where do you think this goes? Do you see Ron Paul as having affected the Republican debate already? Do you think that he'll have an effect on the outcome of the primary season that we're headed into right now, Max?
I think he's had very little impact. In fact, the striking thing to me is that all of the major Republican candidates back a strong, on defense, Reagan-esque foreign policy and eschew the isolationism and the extremism of Ron Paul. It's actually had very little impact on the debate. And again, I would stress that what he's advocating is by no stretch of the imagination can be called conservatism, because conservatives recognize that while there are many things the government should not be doing, national defense is a core responsibility of the government, and that is an essential function that the executive branch must carry out. And they also recognize that we cannot defend ourselves by retreating to the lower 48 and hoping that nobody attacks us. That was not a realistic policy, even in the days of Pearl Harbor. It is certainly not a realistic policy in the days of 9/11. We cannot hide behind our oceans. We have to be actively engaged in shaping the world with a forward defense policy so that we prevent attacks before they materialize. We stop wars before they occur. And I think it's just sheer ignorance on the part of Nick Gillespie to suggest that U.S. Military forces don't perform any useful function in dealing, for example, with the growing threat from China, which, yes, it trades with us, but it also seeks to annex Taiwan by force.
I don't think I heard no useful role, but certainly some skepticism about the role in recent years. We're going to let the security issue go right there. We've got others to get to. Max Boot, author of War Made New and the Savage Wars of Peace, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Let's go to Merton in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Merton, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I just wanted to call and say I'm happy that you guys are covering Ron Paul. I believe this guy makes sense. He talk about a lot of things that make sense, and because of that, the media have been ignoring him. I'm actually a Democrat. I voted for Obama before, and I believe a lot of the financial issues that we're facing, I hear all these politicians talking about balancing the budget, but the truth is, you can't balance the budget unless you deal with the Federal Reserve issue. And Ron Paul is the only politician that I have heard, you know, put these things out. And every time he says it, they ignore him. And if you look at all the war that we've been to, all of these are tied to the Federal Reserve, which also has a lot of international investment bankers that, you know, that are.
Yeah, Merton, let us look at the Fed issue, and I appreciate you raising that one. And I'll get one more before we go to Nick here again. Merton, thank you. David in Grinnell, Iowa. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. What I'm concerned about with Ron Paul is his racism. I grew up in Lake Jackson, Texas, which is in Ron Paul's district. When my family moved to Lake Jackson, the first memory I have is a cross burning. Ron Paul, if you look at his newsletters from the 90s when he was out of office, was engaged in some pretty damned blatant racism. He said, for example, when the L.A. riots broke out, the riots only stopped when welfare checks came out and the blacks went to collect them. And that's the main concern I have with Ron Paul.
David, I appreciate your call. Our time is so short right here. Here's Ron Paul himself on racism and libertarianism. This is 2008.
Libertarians are incapable of being a racist because racism is a collectivist idea. You see people in group. A civil libertarian like myself, see, everybody is an important individual.
Everybody is an important individual, but Nick Gillespie, over the year, there have been comments. Ron Paul has distanced himself from some, said they were ghostwritten, not his, but you hear what David's pointing to. What about his concern there?
Yeah, I recommend that people go to Reason.com and Google who wrote Ron Paul's newsletters. It's a very disturbing episode in his political career, his public life. He did not write the newsletters, but there's a lot to answer for, and he has distanced himself. People who've worked with him and people who know him and people who follow his policies say he's not a racist, but there's, you know, it's definitely worth factoring into as you evaluate him as a candidate.
And Nick, the central bank in a very brief time we have left. On the one hand, huge criticism from the Ron Paul corner. On the other, without a central bank, how do you navigate these huge economic issues and threats that we're in the midst of now? I mean, would you share his desire to sort of take it away, shut down the Fed?
I am. Yeah, I'm not a hardcore End the Fedder, as he wrote a book that was a bestseller called End the Fed in 2009. But the Audit the Fed movement is strong and growing. It makes a lot of sense. The Fed has always been a kind of sacrosanct, supposedly independent entity, but it's clear that it's not independent from the government or from political forces. And it's not clear what it's doing all the time. Reports have come out that it gave money to even Ford, or it floated kind of interest-free loans, gap loans and things like that to various automakers, to foreign banks and things like that. The Fed came into being in the early 20th century, and central banks everywhere are under attack for manipulating currency and kind of futzing with economic growth issues. So it's definitely worth auditing, and that's a very popular position.
Nick, we've got 10 seconds. He said over the week on NBC's Meet the Press on the question on a third-party run, he said, I'm not going to rule anything out or anything in. Can you see him at the head of a third-party candidacy? Just 20 seconds here, Ben. Nick.
I think it's unlikely, but I do think that regardless, his messages and a lot of his points are going to be very much at the front of what happens with the Republican platform and with political discourse among third parties and even the Democrats when it comes to things like foreign policy.
Nick
and,
Gillespie, we're out of time right there, but we're so happy to have had you with us. Nick Gillespie on Ron Paul. He's editor-in-chief of Reason.com. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.